Good day, and for some who are listening to the second session, good evening. This is Robert Itis, and we're talking about plants and their friends. And we want you to just relax, and if you want to get a paper and pencil to take down some information that we're going to give. We forgot to tell that to some of the other sessions that we did, but this would be a good one. We're going to start the program off with a bit of information just produced by Wild Abundance. So if you got it and read it, you don't necessarily have to deal with it, although we're going to explain in detail some of the points that were made. This Wild Abundance is a group that does teaching practical skills for living closer to the earth. And if you want to Gmail them, it's info@wildabundance@gmail.com. So we're going to start with In the Garden and Orchard. This is an interesting beginning. So the first one is to gather compressed leaves in ditches for garden mulch. You want to keep your ditches right now with all the rain as clear as possible.
And take stock of seeds. You may notice now is a time that all the seed catalogs are coming in the mail. It's a good time to go through your stock of seeds and see if you have any seeds. And if you don't, go ahead and order them because planting season's right around the corner.
And then you want to order amendments for your garden. So what are we talking about amendments? In the sunny garden, we're going to have composted manure with a little bit of fungal leaf mulch compost out in there. So all of these soils need to be gotten. We have been taking the leaves off the roads and putting them on the beds to decompose. But we also have been spraying the beds a little bit with some wood ash. And we know that the amendments that you're needing to start off is going to be important. If you're using chemicals, phosphorus and items like that, this is the time to get them all.
You also want to check stock of your garden tools and repair and replace anything as needed. Sometimes when we're at the end of the season, we just put everything back in the shed. Now is a great time on a warm day when the ground's not yet ready to work to go ahead and look at your garden tools and make sure you have everything ready for planting time.
And this is a time to fill in things like squash mounds and to also plant the cover crops. Australian winter peas, really, really good right now.
And then make a garden plan. To plan for success is very important, and it goes the same thing with your garden. You know, map out where you'd like to plant things and, you know, possible crop rotations of leaf, fruit, and root to confuse a pest. You're not planting the same thing in the same spot every year. And this will help get you more out of each soil planting by doing crop rotations and having a good garden plan. You can track what you have season to season.
And then we can, with your garden plan, you can also think about expansion of your beds, where you're going to build a new raised bed. And we can sow onion seeds in flats in a heated space. Now, a lot of people buy starts or sets in the fall. If you're going to do that, you don't have to sow the seeds.
Point. And then now is a good time to prune those fruit trees before the sap starts flowing.
So we're taking this information, again, from Wild Abundance on how to prune fruit trees, winter pruning. So there are many varieties of fruit trees benefiting from pruning, depending on the age, size, and type of tree, and desired results, the approach to pruning will be slightly different. There are several reasons to prune, including shape the tree as it grows, stimulate growth, improve light and airflow around flowers and fruit. That's one of the most important. You don't want branches touching other branches. Then you want to remove the dead or diseased branches, and you want to give roots a chance to get established without a lot of stress of branches to feed. So that's, and especially for newly transplanted bare root trees.
Why winter pruning? Most fruit trees are dormant during the winter, and it's much easier to see what you're doing, including the overall shape of the tree when branches are free of leaves. Pruning in the wintertime stimulates growth on the pruned branch, so it is especially important to prune young trees to encourage a healthy, fruitful, easy-to-harvest form as they grow. The branches that shoot out as a result of early winter pruning will become the main branches of the mature tree. If these branches are balanced and at appropriate angles, later pruning will be easier and overall tree growth and health will be optimal.
So what kinds of trees need pruning? Many kinds of fruit trees benefit from winter pruning, but not all. Palm fruits such as apples, pears, quince do. Stone fruits, peaches, plums, nectarines, persimmons, and pawpaws are all appropriate for winter pruning. Berries and other bushes, like we've done our blueberries, can also benefit from pruning, but the approach is different with trees than they are for the blueberry bushes.
And before you get started pruning, you're going to want to check out your pruning tools. Perhaps the most important tool to have on hand for fruit tree pruning is a sharpening stone. Whatever tool you use to make cuts, make sure it is very sharp. And that is very true for like hand pruners, bypass pruners, and loppers, because loppers and bypass pruners are basically smashing the branches apart. So to ensure you have a good edge on those is very important. And it's easier to make exact cuts and a clean cut with a sharp blade, and the clean cuts are much easier for a tree to heal over. A good quality thin blade pruning saw is the best tool for accurate cuts, and that really just depends on the diameter of the branch that's being pruned. Accompany this with a pair of bypass pruners and a sharp knife makes a great team. So use the pruners for cutting twigs, the hand pruners for the small things. The knife will be helpful to clean up any edges of the cut by the other tools. And the cleaner the cut, the better it is for the tree. And this includes stray bits of bark. It also helps ensure the tree heals over quickly. And so this way, no pest or invading insects can burrow into the tree. Smaller trees can usually be pruned from the ground, while larger trees require a ladder or climbing. And tree climbing is something we're just getting into, and it is a lot of fun even to do recreationally. But we do pruning too. An orchard ladder is an especially made tool that makes pruning larger trees. It also makes harvesting the fruit a little bit easier on more mature trees. It's great on uneven ground. If you have a couple of trees, or if your orchard is on flat ground, you can use a step ladder. If you are dealing with uneven ground, investing in an orchard ladder is well worth it. They make harvesting easier too. They're great tools to have.
Okay, the basic steps of fruit tree pruning are, and these are steps that apply to any medium to large tree. Number one, take a step back and observe your tree. Notice any dead or diseased branches. Look at the overall shape. Pay attention to the base to see if any suckers are shooting straight up from the rootstock near the ground. Follow the branches and notice any water sprouts shooting straight up from along their length. Get a picture in your mind's eye of how you want the tree to look when you are done pruning. No dead or diseased limbs, free of suckers and water sprouts. Balanced structure. No branches touching each other. Plenty of light and air flow throughout. And keep in mind that you don't want to remove more than 25% of the crown in any given year. If you have inherited a wildly overgrown old tree, it may take several years of pruning to get it into the shape you want. So let me just say again that what we want is no dead or diseased limbs, free of suckers and water sprouts, balanced structure, no branches touching each other, plenty of light and air flow throughout.
Very good points. And then with your sharp tools, cut away material moving towards your goal. You can always take more off a tree. We can never take less. So start with small cuts, and then when you remove entire limbs or branches, make your cuts, they say, as flush with the main branch as the trunk as possible. When you look at a tree branch, when it's connected to the main trunk, you're going to see like a ring around the branch that's growing laterally from the main trunk, and it's going to kind of have a collar on it. You don't want to cut that collar off. You want to leave that bark collar on there, the ridge on there. It's a thick spot on the branch. That is how the tree is going to grow and heal over the wounds. So you don't want to make the cut directly against the trunk or directly against the branch you're going to leave. You want to leave just a little bit with that branch collar and branch ridge there so the tree can heal over good. Don't leave large stubs. Leaving too large of stubs causes dead wood, and the tree has to go over the entire stub, and that delays healing. Pay attention to the buds on branches that you prune back. New growth always comes out of a bud, and the direction of that new growth is determined by the location of that bud. So if you want branches to grow upright or more to the left or to the right, you want the bud pointing in that direction. So be sure to wash your tools with rubbing alcohol if you're dealing with any diseased material. We had a fungus that ran around the zoo called sooty canker, and we would prune the trees before the sap would start to flow, and we were very meticulous. You can put some rubbing alcohol in a spray bottle and just spray your loppers or hand tools after every cut so that you're not spreading anything, especially if you're pruning diseased material.
Okay, and step number three, take a step back, observe your tree, make any adjustments you may need to, clean up any large branches you have removed. Small trimmings can be left in place as mulch, as long as they're not diseased. Vision a healthy, strong tree that is full of fruit in the summertime. And we have just passed a Jewish holiday, which is a planting of trees, Tu B'Shvat. If you missed out on planting a tree to start your year off and to help the planet, this would be a good time to do it. Another good thing that we've been doing is at the shows and fairs, if a little kid comes up, we usually pull out a tree about the same size as the kid and tell a parent to plant it and have the kid watch the child watch the tree growing up as it grows up. Okay. So those are some of the great insights that Natalie and the group at Wild Abundance have created. We would like to say again that their website is, you could probably Google Wild Abundance, but their Gmail is info@wildabundance. Oh, the website is www.wildabundance.net. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. See you. Thank you.
And now we're going to switch gears a little bit, and we're going to start to talk about moss. Now, one of the things that I've learned about moss was a couple of very significant situations with moss. The first I learned in a house over in East Asheville that they wanted to create a moss garden, and they put some fertilizer on the edge of the moss. The fertilizer was at the top of the hill, and the moss was below it. And they noticed that the moss would become dead near the fertilizer. So one of the interesting things about moss is you don't want to put a lot of nitrogen on it. You'll kill it. So also you don't want to urinate on it. You'll kill it. Or you'll kill that spot that you've done damage to. That's the first thing. So moss right now, if you go out, especially if the sun's shining, it's a treat. The green color is just magnificent on the rocks and the logs. Now, we have moss paths that are on the farm. And one of the things that I also learned about moss is it does not like to be covered in leaves. So if you want your moss to grow without the buttermilk, which is a recipe for growing moss, you can just make sure that the leaves are not covering it. And you'll find that if you take a circle out of a moss section and leave the major part of the section of the moss there, it will just grow back into that spot by the next year. So the best way to deal with moss is to leave some of it where you are and take some of it and use it in other places. Now, one of the things I wanted to talk about with moss was, if you have a slope that was probably made because of a road coming in or a house site, and it's on the north facing side, so the slope faces the north north pole, you can take that bare clay and go in the forest and gather up moss, the larger pieces the better, and put the moss on the slope. But there's a tendency, if it rained a lot, for the moss to fall off of the slope. So what we've learned is to take pieces of wood, sticks, and puncture it so it looks like a stick poison porcupine. And the sticks going through the moss will hold the moss into its location. You don't need a lot of sticks. But if you had, you know, a piece of moss that was, you know, a piece 2 by 2 foot by 2 foot, then you may have to put 5, 4 on the corners and 1 in the center to hold that in. But if you had smaller pieces, you may only need one stick to hold it in place. And you want to cover that bank with the moss, and if it's in a wet season like right now, the moss is easy to harvest, and with the rain still coming, the new moss will get some rain on it. If you plant and there is no rain in sight for a while, you may want to sprinkle it with a watering can every couple of days. This is a great way to restore a bank that is basically north facing and is clay that will have a lot of runoff when it rains, and the moss will hold it back and the runoff will be slight. There are lots of different types of moss, and I'm going to turn it over to Sina to talk about some of these.
Hey there. Thank you, Robert. It really is a magical time to be out in the forest with the sun is shining on any part of moss. It really does look magical. So just a little bit of background on moss. Coming from the Southwest, we don't have a lot of moss around there, at least in the lower desert. But moving out here, it was absolutely incredible seeing moss, and it's absolutely amazing its vibrancy during the wintertime. So moss, I guess there are about up to 600 species in western North Carolina alone of mosses and liverworts and hornworts. And they're all in the same, they're all related. And what makes them so unique is they are non-vascular plants. They're plants without a vascular system. And that basically means no internal plumbing. A lot of the larger trees and bushes you see, they take nutrients from the soil and they move it up there. They have a vascular system that moves it through their branches. Well, mosses, they don't have that. They are amazing. They are able to take their nutrients directly from the air and the rainwater. And they technically don't have any roots. They have rhizoids that help anchor them to whatever they're growing on, a house, wood, block, any of that stuff. That's going to help them anchor that. And when you're looking at when you're looking at a patch of moss, what you're actually seeing is several species together. They'll grow right next to each other. And when you're digging up moss, you're likely not to be digging up one. You're going to be digging up a couple of different ones. So they're very social plants in that aspect, growing right next to each other. And they can dry out once established. If you're doing erosion control, like Robert was mentioning, you're going to want to make sure that they are anchoring to the soil. But if it's a moss patch that's been there, they can dry almost completely out while they're awaiting rains. And then mosses don't produce seeds like regular plants. They're spore plants. So when you see moss and you see like these little tiny filaments of stalk, almost look like fishing line or thread. They're so small, but the stalks coming out of the moss with a little dot on top of that. That's actually their spores that will take off in the wind or rain. So we have a couple of different kinds of moss. We have like fern moss, we have log mosses, and then we have pincushion moss. And the moss basically is what moss you're going to find is in what part of the forest that you're in. Hardwood forests are great places to see a lot of different species of moss, things like oak, chestnut, And the harder words, black locust, I've noticed, grows a lot of moss on it, which makes it a good use because it's certainly hard to cut up for firewood. And so those hardwood trees, the chestnut, the hemlock, the black locust, those, if you want to learn to propagate moss, those logs, because there's any log that is slow to decay, can provide you with year after year growing moss on that. Any kind of log that's going to be fast to decay is maybe going to provide you with just one season of moss. And then, like Robert was mentioning, you don't have to harvest the entire moss. You can cut out a circle of it. That way it will grow back together. There's certainly a lot of different types of mosses out here. There is at the North Carolina Arboretum a moss roof that gets quite a bit of sun, and I was surprised to learn that moss can take that much sun. So it does very well. And the moss industry is pretty strong out here. About 41% of the moss harvested in the U.S. is from this region. I thought that was very interesting. The rest of it comes from the Pacific Northwest. But it's a couple million dollar, I guess, industry a year for it out here. But moss is a very beautiful plant, certainly very fascinating. If you don't mind, Robert, I'm interested in what you were talking about with the buttermilk and the moss growing. I hadn't heard that, and that just sounds, if you don't mind.
Yeah, no, not a problem. There's, if you Google buttermilk and moss.
Oh, okay. It'll get him.
You'll find that if you take some of the moss there, the little strandy type, mm-hmm. and you put it in with some buttermilk, and then you pour that back out on the ground, that will start your moss. And a lot of moss gardens are started that way.
They started with the buttermilk.
Yeah. One of the things, again, that I want to reiterate is that moss does not like anything around it. It does not like to share a whole lot with leaves. It doesn't like to share a whole lot with other plants that are not compatible with the moss. There are plants that can do very, very well with the moss, but most moss gardens are devoid of any plant material whatsoever. And you just see this wonderful place to lie down on and look up at the trees. It's difficult keeping, especially in the forest, a place free from leaves. So it's quite an interesting task. But right now, with all the leaves down, is a perfect time to take a little patch, say this is my little moss patch, and clear the leaves out of it and just watch the moss grow in it. You don't have to do a whole lot, especially if there's some moss there. Now, if there's no moss there, it's easy to get some. I like getting moss from the rocks. It seems that the whole thing comes up a lot easier. The one thing you do have to watch out for is sister ivy that's on the rocks. So you don't want to go at it with your bare hands. Unless, of course, you are not allergic to the ivy. That would be wonderful when you start to collect your moss. It's easy to do. There are some people who actually make pottery, and then they put moss in it with some small plants, and it is a sellable item at our farmers markets. And it's another craft value-added product that a nursery or a farm can do, especially if you're having farm tours or this is a small item that somebody could pick up. And the nice part about it is that you're bringing the outside inside, and by doing that, you know, people are going to be coming closer to nature. These little moss plantings are, you know, applicable anywhere. It doesn't need a lot of light, and it only needs water when, you know, it's real obvious that it's not getting it. Of course, you could put your finger on it and see if it's moist. There's another way to tell if you want to give it some water. You don't necessarily, the indoors, want to overwater it. You want to just give it enough, and then it'll take off. Any of the specifics that you want to talk about?
Yes. I found sphagnum moss to be really interesting, and many of you may already know this. Most moss is very acidic, and sphagnum moss happens to be also antiseptic. And they used to use it to dress wounds in hospitals, and I guess World War One, and it became quite popular. And they say that sphagnum moss helped save like a lot of people's lives because they ran out of the sterile pads, or I don't know, maybe they didn't have the time, and they were using the sphagnum moss for it, and the wounds were able to heal. And I just find that very fascinating. As Robert was talking about with the leaves, if the leaves gather on top of the moss, that can cause, because moss is getting their nutrients from the water and from the air, the leaves form a thick mat over that, and then water cannot penetrate to through it. If you have a leaf blower, it is, I guess, when you have a large patch of moss, it's good to use that on the moss to blow the leaves away rather than using a rake to do that. And just a note on harvesting the moss, as he was mentioning, the rocks are excellent because then you can pull it off there, as opposed to a log. If you're growing moss on a log or harvesting it from a log, if you pull it off the log, you might be pulling pieces of the log up with it, and that makes it difficult for the moss to reproduce because they're the log is decaying quicker because we're taking some of it with us. And we do, we have a lot of moss we're trying to grow in the house, and it's been really interesting watching the moss outside and how vibrant it is than trying to keep the same vibrancy with the moss inside. It does seem to be a little tricky to get the watering right, but we have some of it, some of the fern moss right by a humidifier, and it's doing very well. And
you need to understand that, as I think Mark said on his second program with us, that the moss right now is part of the winter scene. And you want to just be aware of how beautiful it is out there when you walk and hike, especially on the north sides of those rocks. It's really vibrant.
It certainly is nice to see, especially with gray days and all the leaves off the tree. A walk in the forest is definitely delighted by the moss. And there's just something magical about moss, and like Robert mentioned, like value-added products for farmers, things like terrariums and moss houses and fairy houses, they all go together very nicely, and they're all great activities to get kids outside or adults outside to have a little bit of fun. So creating fairy houses within your landscape using moss and natural materials can be a great way to get kids outside. And moss is pretty foolproof outside, as long as it's, you know, given them, you know, the right plant in the right spot, and shady mosses are kept on the north side. But it's a great activity. And then if you can do terrariums, those mosses and things can come inside.
Yes, this is one of the oldest living organisms that we have on the planet. I think it really needs to be appreciated. much older than the plants and the trees. And
I was just agreeing. Mosses and liverworts and hornworts, they were some of the first living organisms to, come forth before the trees. And before they're older than, you were talking about things that are older than ginkgos, things that are older than palms and cycads. These plants, mosses, came way before all of those. It's definitely very ancient and very adaptable.
So maybe this will give you a better appreciation of some of the things around you. With so many mosses in Western North Carolina, what was that number again?
It's about 600 species.
600 species. It would be very interesting to take the children out and collect them and then bring them back and look at them and say, oh, you know, this one is this shape, star moss, or one of the other ones that are out there, that you start to get to know them specifically as part of the group rather than the whole family. And some of the mosses are extremely interesting. Now, one of the clues in harvesting moss is that if you look at it, you'll see that some of the moss is really, really tight to either the log or the path or the stone. And then if you take your hands, or just a finger, and you press it down, you'll see that the stuff in the center tends to be growing a lot and needs to be harvested so that it could regrow. So I wouldn't take up any, or try to take up any moss that's real flat, but only the moss that when you push on it, there's air underneath there. And that tells you that that is at some of its full growth potential. And if you take and harvest that right now, it will grow back into that space. And it'll make life, harvesting moss, a lot easier if you try to only harvest those pieces that are puffy rather than those pieces that are totally flat to the surface.
That's a good point, because it does make even separating the two a little bit easier if it's airy and it's not securely fastened to a rock or a log. It definitely does make it easier to pull it off of there. And I think most moss, they're pretty much tolerant of any kind of soil because they're not rooted in the soil. So it doesn't matter what type of soil you have. Like he's mentioning, heavy clay, if your soil was acidic, it shouldn't make a difference because moss tends to be fairly acidic. And its growth rate does vary. It can grow, I guess, about 1/4 inch to 2.5 inches annually. And because they are non-vascular plants, you're not going to see them growing upright. You're going to see them sprawling in a growth rate, a growth rate of a sprawling out. And then some plants can be kind of confusing with the name of club moss, and those plants, those are not true mosses. Any plant that would flower or have roots or have a vascular system is not going to be a moss, because moss are spore producing plants with no roots. So some of the names can be kind of tricky out there when you're looking to ID them. I guess best to get, I guess, into the botanical names.
The Spangum moss is a special one for ginseng dealers, in that if you're purchasing something from a reputable ginseng dealer, you'll get your bare roots in Spangum moss, and it will be moist to the touch, and it will keep in a Ziploc bag the moisture for the plants so that they don't dry out. The ginseng roots. This is a tricky time right now for planting ginseng because you don't really want the ground to be frozen. So there'll be some times when 3 or 4 days when it won't go below 32 degrees at night, that's a good time to get them into the ground. If the ground's frozen, you're advised not to plant right now. And there are ginseng roots available at Eagle Feather Farm as a small commercial bit right now.
And sphagnum moss, it's amazing, very versatile. When it's completely dry and they want to re-wet it, it can hold like 16 times its weight in water. It's absolutely amazing. A lot of the moss that's harvested in the country is used for shipping, and it's used in other horticulture products, from shipping plants back and forth. A lot of, indoor or hobby orchid growers will use different types of moss because they're fast draining once dried out, but they can hold moisture as needed. And it's absolutely a plant worth getting to know more, or a whole family of plants getting to know more.
Okay. Well, we've covered a lot of territory with all of the rain that's coming down. I know my road is going through some turmoil, I can appreciate other people going through some of the same things with this freeze and thaw on the roads, and then we've had some boulders move near culverts, holding culverts up. So we have a bunch of things that are happening with this rain. Obviously, I went out this morning, late morning, and the forest looked vibrant. I mean, it was like, wow, that was a good drink. I enjoyed that. Whereas my road with the mud, it didn't have any good news to tell.
Quite the opposite.
Yeah. So check out when you're going out, walking in the woods right now. Such a really great time to get out in the woods and look at the plants. There was one plant that we didn't talk about when we talked about getting out. And it's not so much of a hike through the woods as it is a plant that's out there near the edges of fields and roadsides and stuff, and that's mullein. And mullein's still green and out, and want to say that it's a great time to harvest mullein for bronchial help. It's one of the few things that I learned that were kind of contradictive to my knowledge beforehand, because my knowledge beforehand growing up was anything that was smoke in your lungs was bad for you. However, with mullein, the smoke in your lungs helps repair your lungs. And for those heavy smokers who smoked during their lives, I would highly recommend smoking mullein, drying it out, getting it, getting those fuzzy kind of leaves.
Mullein is an amazing plant. Out west, we called it poor man's toilet paper. You may have heard that, but we loved going camping and pointing it out in the woods and showing the kids that came with us. They absolutely loved picking the leaves. The leaves are very soft. I never actually used it for toilet paper. It's just something I would tell the kids to get a laugh out of them. but I imagine people have. It's a very soft leaf. It is a beautiful plant. Would you say kind of like a blue-green oblong leaf? You'll notice them. And mullein's a really neat plant if you wanted to propagate that. It doesn't mind poor soil. It doesn't mind a lot of sun. It doesn't mind rocky soil. And that's good to know about the bronchial health, too. I have heard people smoking it for the healing and also as a way to wean people off of cigarettes would be to try or tobacco products would be to go with an herbal product that actually has to do with the healing of the lungs rather than encouraging decay.
Now, mullein's one of those interesting plants that comes out as a rosette the first year, and then it creates a stalk with absolutely wonderful flowers, which can be harvested for put into oil, mullein and flowers and oil for kids who have ear problems is really great. The flowers, it's not a go out and harvest the mullein all at once. The flowers come in over maybe a two-week period. And so every time the flowers come in, because if you waited till the 2 weeks, the beginning flowers would be dead and wouldn't have the life or the medicine. But it is a two-year plant. It only lives for 2 years, and then it starts the cycle all over again. So if you're wanting to harvest mullein, it's every other year you have to plant it so that you can harvest it in 2 years. The leaves, I do believe, though, can be harvested in year one as well as year two.
That makes sense. As long as you didn't take too much, it does seem to grow more leaves, but it does make a really pretty rosette and send up a flowering stalk. Absolutely a stunning plant. When you were talking about pruning earlier, it reminded me, you spoke of the Jewish holiday. There's a Chinese.
Yeah,
that's so fascinating. There is a Chinese proverb that says the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago. The second best time is right now. And I think that is so important as we look at our forests. And trees can have a lot of benefits. They can help shade your house. They can create solar traps. They can do a lot of beneficial things, you know, saving on heating and cooling, firewood, shiitake logs. You know, the leaves that fall can be used for mulch. Trees, I don't know, whenever I'm having a bad day, I always look to the trees. And I'm like, well, if the trees can make it through a couple of bad weather days, so can I. trees have just been good friends for a while.
Yeah, the trees and the plants go together. They're companions. The fungal matters are important. The soil community is important for all of the growing that you do. And we're going to be getting into growing your garden in the spring coming up at one of our next classes, programs that we're doing. So, you know, this is a time, as we stated, to go get your seed catalogs, figure out what you want to grow, where you want to grow it, make your map of your garden, make a garden plan for sure, and you know, again, check the equipment that you have to make sure that it's good and have all your soil amendments ready to go or in your beds so that as the spring comes in, we can start to place either seeds in there or plants.
And there's something about rainy days and going through my seeds. When I like to save seeds, and there's some seeds I've been saving for 5 or 6 years now, and it's really amazing the relationship you develop with those plants. And to me, you know, a big box of seeds is wealth. There's so much potential, and there's just so much abundance in nature. You know, you plant one sunflower seed and you get 1,000 seeds. It's absolutely amazing. And we did get an email address set up. It's plantsandtheirfriends95.5 at gmail.com if you'd like to email us with any questions or comments.
That's great. This is an important aspect of the community, and we would like your participation. This is only second to your participation in voting this November. And we will be able to very shortly start producing a program on mountainstream.tv, which will have some of our audio from this show, which is not archived, to be archived on Mountain Stream. And we will have slides of all the plants that we're talking about so that you can get a visual of what it is we're talking, what plants we're talking about and what they look like. And we're going to try and give it to you when they flower and when they bloom and when they go down, so you'll have a good idea of what that plant looks like. And I would say, as we start our New Year's resolutions, that if you took on 5 plants this year to grow them from the spring until the fall, you would have a doable number of new plant information coming at you. And if you did that every year, 5 new plants, before long, in 4 years, you'd have 20 plants that you've grown out. And that's a pretty good garden, especially if we're dealing with medicinal plants. Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good start to a good medicinal garden, both a garden in the forest as well as a garden in the sun, the vegetable garden. So we've gotten a lot of good feedback from the people who've listened to the show, and we're hoping that you all can participate with us. As we say, Sina and I will be at the Organic Grower School March, at least 10th and 11th, I believe. It's a weekend. And we'll be there with at the table with Red Moon Herbs, our friend Jeannie Dunn, and Michael. And that'll be an opportunity to get and talk. Come over if you're going to the Organic Growers School and chat us up. The next opportunity, main one is to learn how to grow ginseng and golden seal at a class at Eagle Feather on April 15th. That's tax day. And that will be a great class to see how you start this process of growing these two plants for your own good, as well as for your community and your family. We will also be down at the farmers market in the first weekend in April. Excuse me, I'm getting my months screwed up. In May. The Spring Herb Festival down at the Farmers Market, I-26 and I-40. So there are going to be opportunities to get and talk to us. And we appreciate being able to be on the air here. It's a wonderful place to do plant work in Madison County. A lot of people appreciate it, and there's lots of plants to see, some very, very rare. So we encourage you to get more involved with plants this year, 2018. And some of the easiest ways of getting involved is to continue with a good understanding of what's around you. Take an inventory of what plants you have, and then get to know all of those. We will be doing a class in the spring on edible weeds, on what you think you're pulling out of the garden as a weed and how you could use that medicinally. Very, very important to understand for survival that the weeds are here to help us survive.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. We were talking about what we would eat right now if we were out there, and I'm like, well, there's a little bit of clover and a little bit of dandelion, but I'm not sure what else. So knowing that stuff is definitely very good.
Yeah, I mean, right now, the chickweed, you could live on chickweed.
Chickweed? Okay, good.
Yeah, which is
start that
kind of the first of them.
Okay.
Well, it looks like we're going to wind this up. thank you all for listening through the whole show, and we will be back on the air at Saturday at 10 o'clock in the morning, and also the second show will be Tuesday at 8 o'clock at night. Have a great day and fun.
Thank you so much.